Ever wonder if there's more to the movies you love? Do you like to ponder how they got from A to Z? Who chose the plot twists? Why use those characters? Is there a deeper meaning? We're here to explore those questions and maybe learn a bit along the way. VGB Studios proudly presents The Filmlosophers.
Hello and welcome to another exciting episode of The Filmlosophers, the show that gets into the movies you love and digs a little deeper. I am your host, Eddie Villanueva, and alongside me, as always, is Mr. Chad Titan Riley.
Watanabe.
That's an actual man's
name. It sounds
last.
Like a greeting, doesn't it? But it's the dude's
not.
Name.
Also with us is
Beast Mode.
Spencer Mothra Williams.
Why am I Mothra, Queen of the Monsters?
Well, speaking of monsters, we are talking about the recently dropped film Godzilla, King of the Monsters. So stick around as we jump into that review, as we got a lot to say. But before we do, Chad, give it to him.
Okay. Like a mythical monster emerging from eons of hibernation, the Filmlosophers podcast is brought to life by Mingle Media TV and VGB Studios. New episodes go thermonuclear each Wednesday morning and stream on Spotify, iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, Libsyn, Player FM, and Audio Boom.
Does it blow up your ears?
Lock into our alpha frequency and join the Filmlosorific conversation on Facebook at facebook.com/filmlosophers and on Twitter at twitter.com/filmlosophy101. And finally, this three-headed King Ghidorah.
Watanabe.
We call podcast has been electrifying listeners with stupid remarks for like the past 3 years, which means you have a lot of catching up to do. Our kaiju-sized episode library is available from tip to tail on our website at filmlosophers.com.
That's right. We have over 160 episodes in our library, so there's
quite
a bit to actually sift through. We just did a review on, what was last week's episode? The movie that you
Brightburn.
Were not happy with? Brightburn. So
I was about to say Bloodborne. I'm like, that's not right.
Isn't that a TV show?
That's a video
game. It's a video game.
Yeah. Oh, well.
Even I know that. I'm not a gamer.
There you go. Well, speaking of not a gamer.
Watanabe.
We are talking about.
It's growing on you. Admit it.
I almost feel kind of bad saying it like that.
It's cool.
It is cool. Very cool. Speaking of cool, we're talking about this week's movie, Godzilla, King of Monsters. This film is the third film in a long-standing franchise of about 5 years.
A long-standing franchise that's just getting started.
Well, seeing as like now it seems like world-building is a really big thing for films, film studios and whatnot.
They try.
Legendary is one of those studios that's really pushing out, trying to create like that type of, you know, consistency. Because you had, what was it that, was it Universal that was doing that Dark Universe?
That got aborted so quickly.
So bad.
So quick, like in a snap. They did two movies and they were like, we're done.
They did two?
They did the Mummy movie.
Yeah, and then.
And then the Dracula Untold movie is apparently in that as well.
Oh, that doesn't count.
Well, you tell that to the studio.
I will.
They thought it counted. Oh, okay. Well, before you go and tell the studio, Chad, why don't you give us that official
the
synopsis?
The new story follows the heroic efforts of the cryptozoological agency Monarch as its members face off against a battery of god-sized monsters, including the mighty Godzilla, who collides with Mothra, Rodan, and his ultimate nemesis, the three-headed King Ghidorah. When these ancient super species, thought to be mere myths, rise again, they all vie for supremacy, leaving humanity's very existence hanging in the balance.
Spencer, you highlighted cryptozoological.
Because it sounded fake, so I did a Google search on what the heck that was supposed to be.
We use Google Docs for notes so we can see anything that anybody's doing in the
I'm the one who's supposed to not do homework. Y'all two need to bring it.
I didn't do homework on things that studios put out, like paragraphs and statements. I watch movies.
The study of dead animals, by the way, I believe is sort of
cryptozoology is about the study of like folklore animals.
Oh, yeah. Folklore. Well.
Well, I'm glad you did that Google search then. Well done. Hats off to you, sir.
Yeah.
Directed by Michael. Directed by Michael Dougherty. The film stars Kyle Chandler, Vera Farmiga, Millie Bobby Brown, also known as Eleven, Bradley Whitford, Sally Hawkins, Charles Dance, Thomas Middleditch, Aisha Hines, O'Shea Jackson Jr., David Straightarm, Hearn, Ken Watanabe.
Watanabe.
Go ahead, Chad. How's that pronounced?
Watanabe.
And Zhang Zi.
Zhang Zi. Something like that.
This marks the third installment of Warner Brothers Pictures Media and shared fictional universe, The Monsterverse, that is centered on a series of monster films featuring Godzilla and or King Kong. So if you're not too familiar, this franchise started back in like 2014 with the first, well, no, I take that back, not the first.
Like the 82nd.
Like the most recent reboot.
The first in this shared universe.
And with that one came the hopes of a possible larger universe at the end of that film, moving into Kong Skull Island, which we did review on this show. I don't remember which episode that was.
That would be lesson 54 for those of you playing at home.
Look who's on the ball.
What? I know how to open tabs on my computer. What? I'll stop. I will. That was it. That was the last one.
I don't think it is.
You're probably right.
but there's been like in this long-standing universe of movies and whatnot, one of the longest crossover type films has always been the kaiju films, because you've always had the opportunity of like these larger monsters like Godzilla. Shin Godzilla came out during the early 50s, and then you had King Kong, which was originated here in America. And then you had
like
the movies.
The 30s, that, yeah.
Yeah, and then you had the crossover of those two eventually in time in the films. And
they've crossed over before?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah. And
again, I don't do my homework.
it's not like, you know, I don't know. It's one of those things where it's like you've had it happen a couple times throughout the history of movies.
I mean, I remember Godzilla, or I remember King Kong fighting two T-Rexes.
Yeah, it was Godzilla versus King Kong in 1962. So.
Huh.
There you go. Learn something
there
or day.
There I go.
Oh.
But.
I thought for a second that photo King Kong's the one breathing fire. And I was like, I am not sure what's happening here.
Spencer's kind of stuck. He's like, I.
There's no version of King Kong I know this. This movie looks amazing.
This is why we shouldn't have a TV.
So you're getting excited for the next one in the Monsterverse, right?
Yeah, apparently.
Godzilla versus Kong.
I mean, for me, I really...
It's next year.
It is. Because they did say... Yeah, they said 2020.
Yeah, wow. March.
I'm a huge fan of the kaiju movies. I've always liked those, especially with, you know, when we talked about it on the first, not the second, but the first Pacific Rim review we did, where we talked at length about the robots and the kaijus and the battle between those two, and kind of how Japan pretty much perfected the art of man in suit acting and creating those types of things. Mm-hmm. Spencer, I'm pretty sure you're more familiar with all the Power Ranger episodes where the man in suit is fighting a person in a robot like that.
Yeah, I am.
I knew it. But I, you know, it's kind of like I don't know, one of those types of artistry, you know, within cinema that, yes, it's kind of cheesy. Obviously, there's a dude in a suit with a miniature city down below fighting another dude in a suit.
Hey, I grew up watching Power Rangers.
So you know.
It's fine. It's easy to, you know, suspend disbelief and mm-hmm. just accept what you're seeing.
Mm-hmm. I would have to agree. It is.
Are you enjoying a libation in the middle of the podcast episode?
You know, it's really hard for me to know if you're doing that because I can't see you.
You can't see me. We are, yes, back in VGB Studios, and the same signature screen that is blocking Spence has now turned the tables on Spencer himself.
I think that saliva noise is one of the most disgusting noises, and I'm going to need you to stop, or I'm going to go full Ken Watanabe on you.
Let them fight.
Okay. So yeah, I mean, there's a ton of history with the kaiju films altogether, and this one isn't necessarily like them having people in suits and having fights, whatever, but it is still an homage to the films of old that did that kind of stuff, and it was really interesting to be able to see and translate it in the modern age, because yes, you look at any trailer from like the old school Godzilla films or the old school King Kong films, and you either had like some kind of Harryhausen type armature moving, you know, a little bit, or you had a person in a suit destroying a fake city with little snap, crackle, and pops everywhere anytime you hit a power line kind of thing.
Yeah. I mean, that's what happens, right?
They're very
monster
volatile,
stomps
yeah.
into the city, and the Transformers on the power lines, not Michael Bay, blow up like firecrackers.
That's the next one down the line. It's Godzilla versus the Transformers.
He better win.
Who?
Godzilla.
Oh, I'm like, who, Michael Bay? Yeah, he's definitely going to win. He's going to have his pockets full of money at the end of that one. Before we go forward, a little bit in the numbers. The budget for this film was around $170 million. Its domestic opening weekend was around $47.8 million. Worldwide totals, as of today, $181.6 million. So they've already recouped what they've spent thus far. And maybe you may know better than I would, Chad. This is kind of a side.
Oh, boy.
But
ask the man who doesn't do his homework.
No. This is actually a marketing question.
Oh.
Do you happen to know if that 170 mil includes their marketing after the fact?
No, it would not.
It does not include?
No, okay. That would be the production. Marketing would be a separate budget.
Okay, so that I was wondering that, because I'm like, 170 mil, we keep hitting a lot of these, you know, things where we say, you know, okay, this is the budget. This is just the budget for production. This is not the budget.
Publicity, marketing, all of that is a different thing.
That's a good thing to know. I didn't know that. So
yeah, typically these, what you see on like IMDb.com or whatever, will be the actual like production cost. So there's the creative process of making the movie, and then there is the, it's not non-creative, but really it's just the promotional process of amping people up for it and getting them to know that it exists, and you know, sending the actors all over the world to do press junkets and all that kind of stuff, hotel stays and limos and whatever is involved with that, and all the TV spots and all that. That's a totally separate thing. And probably for a lot of big movies like this, or you know, a lot of summer movies that are well promoted, you're probably looking at another like 60 to 100 mil in like promotional efforts.
Oh, wow.
So
pretty penny.
Yes.
I'm like, huh, okay, well maybe they're paying, I don't know, $20,000. They put some.
But it's still a good sign. I mean, to have already recouped the production budget in the first weekend worldwide, that's still a good sign, because they have however many weeks they keep it in theaters, they've got second run theaters, they've got other markets they probably haven't started it in, and then they've got, you know, digital download, Blu-ray, DVD sales, any product tie-ins. I don't know if they do toys for something like this or, you know, whatever, but there are other in sources of income after the theatrical release.
One of the things I have to actually appreciate about movies like this, one of the things they've started doing as a, I guess, prequel piece of information, is a lot of them have been creating comics.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this one had a bridge
between
the 2014 film and this one,
and it's actually pretty cool, seeing as like that's the direction a lot of people are already going with, as we've already stated several times throughout the life of this podcast. You know, when it came to Marvel films, a lot of the Marvel films kind of preemptively sparked a large interest in the comic book arena, because people are wanting to know, like, oh, who's that? Oh, there's a history of them? Oh, I'm going to go read them. And, you know, so forth. So because of that, people are like, oh, well, people are already going to the comic book stores to read about, you know, the latest Incredible Hulk escapade or Thor. Why not put it where people are already going? So it's actually a pretty smart move.
Well, they've got tons. I mean, obviously, the genre films lend themselves more to it, you know, because you've got TV shows and other movies and old properties even that get converted into comics or graphic novels all the time.
Yeah.
And then obviously when you reboot it through a film or a cinematic universe like this, then, you know, you've got a resurgence of interest, and it's just a, can be a gold mine if you do it right.
Completely. So diving into this movie, let's talk about expectations. Now, I one of the great reasons why I love the team that we have for this podcast is because we have varying degrees of expectations. Chad, I know when it comes to a particular movie or a franchise, if it's not something that's like sword and sandals or based in some type of literary lore, he tends to have a somewhat of an open mind, depending on how the marketing goes. He has his opinions, but, you know, and myself, I tend to overdo in terms of like research and information, and I go above and beyond. I read a lot of the material beforehand.
Yeah, you're like every week, you're like, make me a sponge. And then you just soak it all up. I'm like, I don't know how you have that much time in your life to read and watch and rewatch and reread and all of it, but you do.
I try. And then we have Spencer, and I love Spencer to death.
Why does this sound like a butter up for like a SmackDown?
Yeah, there's a turn coming, Spencer.
I don't like it. I can see it coming from a mile away.
You can't see nothing. There's a screen.
I can't see you, but I saw
Spencer,
that.
Spencer, get ready for the clapback.
I adore Spencer to death. He's a great friend and an incredible podcaster.
But
sometimes he comes in and he's like, I don't know. And I love that about him because of the fact that, like, after that, then he's like, but then this happened. And we get bombastic Spencer. But I love the fact that Spencer sometimes is like, I didn't watch any of the movies before that one. No. There were 12 before it. I just thought I'd go in fresh. And it's like, for somebody who went to the nth degree to do all this work and then to come in here and say, hey, Spence, did you at least see the first one? There's movies before it? And it's like, oh my gosh.
Okay, sometimes it's just, it's great. I know. It's great. I know.
You know what?
I
know.
Spencer, had you heard of Godzilla before this movie?
Yes, okay, yes. I saw the
thank God.
First in this line, you know, the Godzilla movie from 2014.
The one with Quicksilver and Scarlet Witch?
They were both in that movie?
Yeah, they were a married couple in that movie.
Oh.
Which is really interesting.
That's weird. And then I saw the Matthew Broderick one from the 90s.
Oh, gosh.
It's so bad.
Well, and the Godzilla in that one is so ugly.
He is.
I mean, it's not like he's cute in these, but still.
But he looks nothing like what any of the Godzillas came before.
Ever.
No. Like, he
before
looks like,
or after.
He looks like a giant T-Rex.
He looks like his head got stuck in a box and he was there for about a million years. His head is so boxy, it looks weird.
I mean, that is kind of how they work, right? Like, they hibernate for eons and eons and eons and millennia.
In a box?
He must have had his head in a vise the entire time because his head was narrow and flat. I mean,
some of them are in the Antarctic ice. Is it really that different? I don't know.
Here's the worst thing about that. I used to watch the cartoons growing up. I didn't.
The ones based off of the movie?
The ones based off of the movie.
Oh,
I did not know what in the world the storyline that connected that movie to this cartoon was until like a couple, like last week. And apparently, at the end of that movie, when Matthew Broderick touches the Godzilla egg that opens up and he touches the Godzilla, he imprints upon that Godzilla, and that Godzilla follows Matthew Broderick as like his mother figure. I had no clue that was anywhere in the cartoon. That was not obvious to me.
I hated that cartoon, so I refused to watch it.
I have no idea what either of you are talking about, and I'm happier for it.
Oh, my gosh. That was when the WB was having their cartoon show.
The WB.
So, needless to say, expectations going in. Spencer, let's go ahead and start with you. What were you expecting going into the film? Aside from the Matthew Broderick movie.
Well, I wasn't expecting that.
Thank God.
That would have been a nightmare. I would have walked out probably.
Matthew Broderick comes in. I think I can help in this situation.
That's a lot of fish.
I'm putting together a team.
Oh my God. I Okay. Expectations. I did not see the second movie, The Skull Island,
which is Kong Skull Island, which actually, in all honesty, I think is the better out of the first two.
Okay,
like the first Godzilla was okay, but I really did like Kong Skull Island.
I liked them both. I thought that they were really, it's hard to say realistic, but they made efforts to seem more realistic than anything that had come before them in this genre.
Yeah, I didn't really like the first Godzilla that much because, like, I felt like it suffered from a problem of being too human-focused because a lot of the times Godzilla's about to go fight something and it's like, let's go see the human scurry on the ground. It's like, I came to see a monster movie, not people running the movie. Like, why can't I see that? And so I was hoping that they would focus more on the monster fights in this movie.
Vial-containing heart not found. Error 404.
It's a movie called Godzilla. Like, what do you want me to expect?
Have compassion, man.
Compassion. So, get out of the way. Jeez.
So you saw that for that film. You didn't see the second one.
Right.
What were some of the things you were expecting to see out of this one?
Like, I was expecting them to focus more on, like, Godzilla. And other than that, and, like, knowing that there's going to be a lot more monsters, I had no idea what they were going to do. I was just hoping they were going to do better than 2014.
What about you, Chad?
I don't know that I really had strong expectations either way. I think that, in general, there are very few films within this thread, within this type of genre, that I think have been done well. I think there's a certain allure and likability for, like, the claymation stuff from, like, decades and decades ago.
Yeah.
Because, like, it's not supposed to stand up to the test of time as in, like, realistic. Like, yeah. It's very much claymation or person in suit or whatever, you know? And I think that that has its place in the overall sort of, I guess, galaxy of filmmaking. And so there's a certain charm to it.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't mind the older stuff. I wouldn't sit through a feature-length version, but, like, it's fun to see. But then when you get to the more recent, you know, the 2014 Godzilla, 2016 Kong Skull Island.
I believe so.
Or 2017. And then obviously, like, Pacific Rim Uprising, also Kaiju. Films, not in this universe, not in this shared monster verse, but big monsters attacking cities, there's definitely an effort being made to seem plausible and realistic, and yet it's so not. It's hard for me to really develop an expectation. I just don't want to be disappointed, I think, is what it really comes down to. Like, don't do cheap special effects, because that will ruin it. And don't put ridiculous story elements in Pacific Rim Uprising with Charlie Day's character. That was so stupid. That was so
it was stupid. So dumb.
All of it was terrible. Every moment was regrettable. So, like, as long as you don't do, like, a major flub like that, I'm probably going to come out feeling, you know, entertained, and, like, you didn't, you know, ruin it for me.
You didn't get your time.
And that's kind of what I want. Like, I don't really have a whole lot of expectations beyond that. Just, you know, don't ruin it.
Yeah.
Don't drop the ball.
Is it sad that the fact that every time we see any of these types of movies now, it's always going to be compared on the opposite side of the spectrum to Pacific Rim Uprising?
No, that's what that movie deserves.
It's not, though, only Pacific Rim Uprising. Need I remind you, lesson 109, Rampage, is also a giant monster movie and was even worse.
Oh no! Than Pacific Rim Uprising. I have to agree with you on that one. Pacific Rim Uprising was way worse than Rampage.
No,
like, they had a snowball fight at the end of that movie.
At the end of Pacific Rim Uprising.
Yeah,
that is true. I mean, you can't get any better than Dwayne The Rock Johnson fighting next to a large oversized gorilla against a monstrous alligator and a flying wolf.
At least they delivered on their promise of a rampage. I still don't know what the uprising is.
But the rampage was stupid. It was the whole, like, weird,
But they delivered on it.
Honestly, this film is a bit of a rehash of it, to be honest, because it was all the whole, like, alpha predator frequency, like, go to the signal and destroy everything in between. I mean, there's a lot that it has in common. By the way, for those of you keeping score at home, we actually saw Pacific Rim Uprising and Rampage within a couple of weeks of each other.
That is true.
So Uprising is less than 107. If you want to hear our take on it, Rampage, again, was less than 109.
By the way, Kong Skull Island was in 2017. So
okay. Okay, all right. All right, I'll see that. And so, yeah, so what were your expectations,
well,
Eddie?
Thank you.
Our researcher extraordinaire.
So in terms of, like, just my research and my information, like, a lot of the things that I base a lot of my expectations on were honestly mostly on the hope of, like, seeing the consistency of these movies being created. Like, you had in the first one, in the 2014 one, you had this, like Chad had mentioned, this base of realism. Like, they wanted to show the destruction was very real, the amount of damage, the battle sequences, how, like, its impact in the world around it. Like, there was so much that was based in the idea of, like, okay, this is the repercussions of having such creatures on this world do battle. I really liked Kong. I liked Kong Skull Island because it was a unique take. It wasn't so much focused on, like, the damsel in distress and, you know, this creature trying to go out and you know, end up getting killed at the top of the Empire State Building. Like, it wasn't that type of story. It was a much more unique story. Not to mention, you got to see Samuel L. Jackson play, like, a guy who slowly slips into madness, so that's always fun. Plus, this is one of the film universes that's starting to create a consistent expectation with end credit scenes. Because at the end of Kong Skull Island, you have the reintroduction of the two main characters in that one into the much bigger picture, which is that there are other creatures out there that we're following, and we need to see what happens with those. And they show, like, glimpses of, like, Mothra, Rodan, and then they show at the very end the scene of King Ghidorah, which was really great because I was really hoping to see one of those in the next film, and to come find out, like, all three of those were going to be in the next movie. So my biggest expectation was the consistency of what they were doing. It seemed to continue to get better from the first film to the second one. And with so much hype and so many conversations about what was going to take place in this next film, I was really hoping that that next step was going to happen in terms of moving up. So, and mind you, a really, really awesome, like, kaiju fight was also maybe one of the smaller expectations. I don't know, like, you know, something really massive and insanely, like, destructive in the middle of the town, wherever we were going to have that fight. So, yeah.
Okay.
But, you know, so, yeah, like, where I was at, that was the majority of my expectations. Just really hoping to see something better than the last. Which, I mean, yeah, out of two movies, it's not really much of a consistent thing that had been already set. But I hope that that would have been created with this one, in terms of the better film after another.
You know, I think, too, one of the things, going back, Spencer, to something that you said about, you know, too human-centric and all of that, and you go to see a monster fight and, you know, whatever. I think that's absolutely true. At the same time, with the 2014 Godzilla, and part of this really started for me in the marketing campaign. The first trailer for that film was incredible.
Oh,
because
yeah.
You're like, were you in a building or a bunker or something? And you just see that, you hear things and you don't know what's going on. You see the giant, like, scaly leg moving by, or the tail, or both, or whatever. You have no earthly clue. So I thought that the creative decision by Gareth Edwards, who's the director of that film, and his team, to really change the perspective of a giant monster kaiju fight movie. From time to time, obviously, you got the widescreen cinematic battle sequences between the monsters still, yeah. But the decision to really ground it in the limited perspective of a human being, you know, being locked in a supposedly safe space, or like just, I'm 6 feet tall, Godzilla is like a 40-story building or whatever, yeah. Like, the scale is unimaginable, and I don't remember being affected as much with previous, you know, monster movies as really that first trailer.
Yeah.
The movie itself kind of paid it off a little bit, but like even the second trailer where the paratroopers are like flying through the smoke and you don't know when you're going to see the monster, like its head's going to come out and it's going to eat one of them or all of them or what, like it was that fear of the unknown thing, and it was super cool and really smart. So I think that definitely there's an expectation, I agree with you, Spencer, to see the monsters fight each other. But if you're going to have a feature-length film, I think that there should be a compelling connecting point also, which is where the human part comes in.
Yeah.
I think that the Edwards film in 2014, personally, I think that film did it a lot better than this film.
Yeah.
This film seemed almost like it was two different movies trying to coexist. One about humans, like suddenly, I don't know, teleporting. And like, it was just like, how were they all everywhere? Like, all the same people are literally everywhere, just as fast as the monsters and whatever. And there was a level of unreality to just like how conveniently connected all the people were to the bigger story of these mythological beasts. And I think that made it difficult. It wasn't difficult to kind of get invested in the human characters or even in Godzilla himself, but to stay invested for the whole movie was really challenging for me.
Okay, I have a quick question.
Yeah.
When they were going through that, like, undersea tunnel thing, and, like, you see them, like, scraping out, at what point in the movie did they say they were getting into a submarine? Because I completely missed that. They were just all of a sudden in a submarine.
Well, they got into a submarine, I think, didn't they? Like, they did that on screen, I thought.
Yeah, because they
were loading, like, the torpedo and whatnot. But
they were loading the nukes and all that.
Yeah, they had, like, in the exact moment that they needed a tool, they had it. Always.
Yes,
if that was a weapon, if that was a vehicle, if that was a wormhole in the middle of the earth, for crying out loud. Like, in the exact moment that it was needed, it was there. And that really pulled me out of the movie quite a few times.
Well, it's true. And I think, to your point about the teleporting thing, I was kind of wondering that, because are you talking about the time, like, one of the specific times that I thought about it was like, okay, the woman, the Asian scientist.
Oh gosh, that was really confusing.
Was like
her and her mom,
Zhang Ziyi, sister.
Her sister.
But it's that was like her sister.
It's like a series of twins. Her grandparent, her grandmother's grandmother was a twin. Mom was a twin, and now she and her sister are twins. But you don't know that.
It doesn't say
until
anything
after. I'm like, wait a minute. Did time pass? Because her hair's long all of a sudden.
Yeah, or she's over by Mothra, and then
and how
she's
did she
over
get
the
there?
Ship.
Yeah. But then it was like, and then they choose to tell you like, oh, and you're like, I actually literally don't care. I don't know what that adds to the story. It's, and they never really follow up on it. That's the only time you see the twin sister.
Yep.
And then it's like, is that being reserved for like Kong or Godzilla versus Kong? Like, are they both going to be, both characters that she's playing are going to be in that, and it's going to be paid off somehow? Because it sure the heck wasn't in this movie.
So just a heads up, before we continue on, this is a spoiler review, so we will be talking about things that are pertinent to the story.
You should know that by now.
I don't think we've had a non-spoiler review in a little bit. So.
We're really bad at, even we if are. We're trying to do a non-spoiler, we still, you know, do the dance.
It's
so
fine.
So, little side note to the conversation at hand. So, in the original Godzilla versus Mothra film,
there was twins.
Mothra is actually an alien. And before he arrives, there is a pair of twin aliens, you're right, Spence, who come, they're women, and they proceed before Mothra gets there, talking about how the world needs to change, we need to clean up, blah, 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 blah. And
the aliens say this?
Yeah. They come to Earth giving a message of, like, you need to do better or whatever, and they don't listen to them, and so Mothra comes and begins attacking the city. Or attacking, ultimately the city.
Wait, so Mothra attacks because this one planet is too polluted?
Pretty much.
Sounds like a Captain Planet villain.
See, I didn't understand, I've not seen, again, I don't do homework. I didn't realize that Mothra was a good character. Like, Mothra is also a heroic figure in this movie. And I was like, oh, I wasn't expecting that.
It's true.
Because she's, like you said earlier, queen of the monsters, apparently. I also didn't know that.
Yeah, I didn't know.
Well, that's like, okay.
And the characters at one point are like, so Godzilla and Mothra, like, make more monsters?
Well, so when she debuted, the creature debuted, like, yeah, it was a huge misconception. Inside the film, like, people thought, or Godzilla thought it was coming to attack. After that, it
because
does become
it
a better...
Because it was attacking?
True.
Didn't you say that the twin alien ladies said, y'all
right,
fix
right.
it, and they didn't, so Mothra attacked. So I would say that Godzilla thinking it was attacking is probably pretty accurate.
But they do change, like, the storyline later as the years go by. Mm. And they redid the Mothra's, like, mythos and, like, changed it for good, but in the beginning it was that way. So that's the Easter egg, so to speak, the one that's not really seen unless you're, like, super, you know, adept to, you know, watching every single thing that happens. That was the quote-unquote Easter egg for Mothra, the twins.
But it wasn't an Easter egg because we already met Mothra before we ever met either one of them.
The idea, you know,
like, Mothra was the first thing that you saw.
Yeah.
As a larva.
Mm-hmm.
A giant monster larva, but a larva.
Which none of the twins were there when Mothra emerged the first time. So I don't. That's kind of the idea that, oh, we're going to let people know, like, this is a
so
Easter egg.
Zhang Ziyi is supposed to be an alien?
Or that's
two
what she,
aliens?
Two aliens. I don't know if she's supposed to be in this movie or if she's just. I don't know. Spence, I can hear you, like, wanting to say something from behind the screen here.
Yeah, it's just we keep jumping from subject to subject, and there's so many things. But I'll just think about the last thing I was
I was going to say, start with the last thing, we'll work our way back.
Okay, so does anyone else find it odd that, like, Mothra has been a larvae for, like, millions of years?
Super
wakes
odd.
Up and then immediately cocoons, like... That seems really not how, like, that's supposed to work.
Spencer?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Okay. It just seems
like... No, it makes for very... There's a lot of... So let's just be plain and simple. There's a lot of plot holes in this particular movie. There are a lot of things that just don't really make sense, but they force it anyway.
Yeah, there's a lot of what one would call contrived... scenarios, situations, and alleged character quote-unquote development ?
Yeah.
There's a difference between a story that's been workshopped really hard and goes into production and is made, and effort is made for it to make sense, even though it's, let's say, a monster movie. Like, it's only going to have so much reality to it because it's fundamental... core is fantastical. But here they do all of this, like, storytelling work to make it grounded and realistic, but then the actual proceedings of the film are it's just plot, like, we need the people to be here now, we need the monsters to be there now, we need these people to reveal something now.
Yeah.
And it, you feel that, and it's really awkward when it's not handled super well, because you're like, in a fantastical movie, that logic doesn't make sense.
Yeah.
Like, that's saying a lot to challenge the logic of your internal world just because you're serving the plot instead of, like, making it continuous, like, making it make sense. Not to mention, there are way too many human characters in this film.
Mm-hmm. You know, I was
like,
say,
I'm like, what is this? Battlestar Galactica? I love that show. It had like 20 characters that you were following, but that's because it was a TV show and it needed different people in the spotlight in different episodes. This movie has 20 human characters in it and like 8 monsters. So like, it's just, it's really heavy.
And that was one of the things that I was really hoping it took an opportunity to do, which was, create monsters that were actually from previous movies, like Rodan. Yes, all the key characters, all the key creatures, they were all from previous films. But like that large woolly mammoth looking thing, I don't remember that at all. The creature that was in the first film, the Muto, that's mm-hmm. in it. That was like, oh, okay, that's a cool callback. I thought he killed him, but okay, whatever. And then the spider looking crab thing, like, it just didn't seem, I felt like that was a missed opportunity. To Spencer's credit, I do agree to an extent, like, yes, there should have been more focus on the monsters in this one
mm-hmm.
because of the fact that there was more monsters in it to focus on.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like there should be a snap somewhere in there, like,
okay, mm-hmm. but there was a lot of focus on the monsters.
Yeah.
Like, the woolly mammoth ape thing, okay, that really was just a side thing. The other Muto, the spider looking thing, like those were just like there to say like, oh, and there's other stuff happening in other parts of the world too. But like, you were focused pretty intensely, I mean obviously, on Godzilla and King Ghidorah, but also Rodan and Mothra had really large parts. I mean, I think that they again, I felt like it was two different movies slammed together.
Yeah.
There's the human angle, and then there's the monster fights. And they're both fairly complete in terms of telling those stories, but then the fact that they're interwoven and slammed together just feels really off.
Yeah, and I think one of the biggest things, so obviously real quick before we dive too deep into that, like some of the key players, you have Kyle Chandler who plays the father, Vera Farmiga who plays the mother. They're both scientists in some aspects. They're very much in,
although you don't really know that in the beginning.
Yes.
That was awkward.
Millie Bobby Brown plays the daughter of both of them.
She owned, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
You thought Millie Bobby Brown did?
She owned.
I did
a great job, I thought.
She owned.
She, like, I was worried that she was just gonna come in and be 11, like most of the movie.
Yeah.
And I felt like she did more than that.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I just, for me, it still seemed like very 11-y. But I think it's, no.
I disagree.
Yeah, I do too.
I disagree strongly.
I think for the fact,
okay, that her face is the same.
True.
I'll give you that.
I don't know. I think it's honestly, it's one of those things where it's like you've seen somebody do a role for not so long, but long enough to where consistently.
She's like 14 years old. You can't have seen her in much else.
I mean,
they make the seasons like back to back. We're talking, by the way, 11 is a character on the Netflix series Stranger Things.
Yes.
In case you only watch movies and you don't watch serialized programming like Netflix.
I don't know. It was difficult for me a little bit.
I think that's your bias showing.
I don't know.
He's calling you out.
No, I just think she did okay. I mean, she didn't do like phenomenally or anything. I just, she was all right.
Yeah, but she was the best of the human performers. That doesn't say very much for the rest of them.
Yeah, no,
like,
actually,
you have a point. She owned compared to all of them. You could add up any combination of 5 of the other human characters, and it still wouldn't equal the value that she brought on her own mm-hmm. to the movie.
I think I can agree with you on that.
She was doing the most in this movie. Like, I kept looking to her to do something. Like, with all these other adults just being like, well, we didn't expect this. And she just ups and goes and does stuff. Like, she gets stuff done.
She does.
To your point, yes. Out of everybody else that was on the cast, there was all just a bunch of duds. Like, aside from Ken Watanabe.
Which is unfortunate, because there are a lot of recognizable faces.
Oh, yeah. But a lot of the lines seemed very, like, predictable. A lot of it seemed like, okay, he's probably going to say this right now.
Well, this is probably Bradley Whitford's character should have not been in this movie.
Thank you. Yes, 100%. I did not see any usage of his character in this movie at all.
I mean, that was clear in the trailers, though.
Yeah, the, oh my God,
I was like, no. Get him out of here.
Yeah, I did kind of already have a vendetta against him, but he proved that the vendetta was legit. Like, yeah. I don't think that his character should have been in the movie.
I don't see why it was in the movie and why that got past screen testing.
Like, just to deliver really lame one-liners.
Like, that's all he did. He was the quirky console operator, essentially.
But then, like, sometimes was also deployed onto helicopters and, like, warships and things. Like, there was just so much in this movie that didn't make any sense.
Yeah, there was a lot of, like, people being places, and I'm like, should you be here right now?
Right, like, why wouldn't you have stayed? Is anybody guarding the base? Isn't that your castle, so to speak? But
yeah.
But no, we all travel together in a pack. And if we want
except
to,
we
our castle is going to be a giant stealth bomber a la a helicarrier from Marvel Cinematic Universe flying around with blue engines. So there. I'm like, at least have the decency to make it look like a butterfly.
Monarch, I get it.
Yeah.
It's true. There's a lot in this film that, like, you have a great cast. I felt like Ken Watanabe should have had more opportunities to be himself in this movie. I thought the dynamic between Kyle Chandler and Vera Farmiga was, that was kind of forced. It was like you said, that was a whole thing in itself. Like the whole eco-terrorism plot seemed like something from another movie. That was the part that I felt could have been without. But sounds like Spencer disagrees.
No, I agree so strongly. Why eco-terrorism? Really? Like, also, she sided with the eco-terror. Why are we suddenly on a roll of ridiculously questionable parenting choices? Like, I don't understand. Like, last week, parenting choices. I had a big issue.
You did.
I'm back to parenting issues. Like, she brought her daughter with her. And she was, like, dealing with Mothra?
It was mother-daughter day at work.
No, she's a moron.
That was
she's
insane.
She's a ridiculous moron. And there's nothing that you can tell me that will change my mind.
Oh, my 100% God.
She's one of the worst characters I've ever seen on screen.
I was so mad anytime her face showed up
yes.
on screen. Because I was like, you're instantly wrong in the scene. I don't care what's happening. It's the movie.
The camera pans there. Spencer's like, wrong.
Oh my gosh.
No, she was...
She was the worst.
And, like, the catalyst of the entire, you know, proceedings with releasing the other monsters and whatever, I would say hers is a character that also should have been totally deleted from the movie. I don't care that she's, like, the scientist, good guy, bad guy, turncoat, what, the mom of the what... Like, no, she was a terrible character. She never should have been written the way that she was, and the movie suffers tremendously because of it.
Well, and I think, like, even the ending of the film where, like, the way that whole thing resolves with her story, I felt like
so
was
mad.
It was super lazy. Like, a super lazy way to do it. Like you said, first off, she shouldn't have made it that far into the film. Secondly...
First off, she shouldn't have been in the film.
Well, yes.
Secondly, she shouldn't have made it that far.
No.
And I felt like as much as I hated her, I hated him just as much for even like...
Hey, don't badmouth Coach Taylor. I will not stand for it.
What was that show used to be on, Early Edition?
Yeah, that's the one I know him from.
That's the only thing I know him from as of like... I don't know.
Oh, I gotta educate y'all. Friday Night Lights, the TV show, was really good. P.S. Spencer, your microphone stand has like the monarch symbol all over it. Just pointing it out.
Well, Spencer did say he wanted to talk to us about a group he's putting together. So just. but yes, the let's just to be pretty frank, the human characters were not the strongest parts of this
Garbo.
Movie.
Garbo.
Terrible.
And even to the point to where, spoiler alert, you have Ken Watanabe do like this selfless act of giving himself so that he could help recharge Godzilla.
Also wait, dumb.
Okay.
Like, you recharge him and then now he's a ticking time bomb. Like, how does that make sense?
Also, could they have not have just strapped one of those like remote servo things with a warhead and sent it towards Godzilla?
It's the one tool they don't have when they need, Spencer.
It's like,
why did they waste three doing that? I don't understand. People were so dumb.
It's because they needed him to go in for to service the plot of the movie.
Okay, like they
wanted him to touch Godzilla's skin. I'm like, if the drones are blowing up in this place, how is his skin okay?
Yeah, he should have had like radiation burns.
Shouldn't it have been like almost like you were going toward the center of the sun? Something I remember like that movie. It had Chris Evans and Michelle Yeoh and Cillian Murphy. What was it called? Sunshine. Oh, man. That movie freaked me out. When those blast shields open up, I'm like, that's what I was expecting when the dude took off his glove. Just I'm like, oh, it's going to just like burn him immediately. But no.
Yeah.
He was going to take his melting skin and wipe it on the forehead of Godzilla. Simba. Sorry.
Okay. Like, all right, also,
Scoob.
But, like, they had a submersible. Like, that's the time where you just, like, put a brick to the pedal and just shoot it off. Like,
Spencer.
What? They didn't try. They didn't try at all. They wanted him to die.
We need a nuclear warhead and a brick.
Hey, we've seen worse.
But... okay, so...
they also didn't have a brick on the submarine. We're sorry.
Exactly. Switching gears from the actual characters, like the creature work on this movie, you have to give props where props is due.
That's a good point.
The creature work in this movie was phenomenal. Like the detail in all the small and the finer parts of each of these creatures was pretty spot on. I kind of said something a little bit earlier about the woolly mammoth looking one, but then you look at the design of it, It looks really cool. It's not obviously, like I mentioned, from a previous film, but it still looks really awesome. And
totally.
You got like Rodan. Rodan looks incredible. It's very bird-like, but still lizard. And they do a lot of really great close-ups. The texture, I mean, it looks realistic.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah, and it like pulls off some baller moves in midair. It takes out the whole squadron of fighters and all kinds of cool stuff.
That was pretty amazing attack of just, like, let me rotate in midair. Like, all of the monsters were actually really great, especially Mothra. Mothra was beautiful.
Oh, man. when she first, like, opens her wings and, yeah, that was super cool. That was where you saw the one of the twins that didn't make any sense. But.
I thought they were all going to die because I was like, that seems like that should be radioactive and very deadly if it's glowing like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, I thought that repeatedly. Like, once you kind of get the whole, like, oh, they're powered by nuclear energy kind of. Like, yeah. Then I was like, then how is anybody surviving? Like, anywhere that they go is a radiation zone. They're huge. They're enormous. That's part of the whole, like, shtick, right?
Yeah.
So, like, how is anybody okay?
Like, nobody should be.
Close to them. Like, at all close to them. It should be, like, a dead zone. Like, birds fall out of the sky and plants wither and die and all kinds of crazy stuff.
After the events of today, the entire eastern side of the United States is sterile. Because you're right. At the very beginning, there's the incident where they're trying... The egg sac or whatever that is of Mothra is starting to go off. But before, like, it starts going nuts... they show, like, high levels of radiation. There are people in, like, those hazmat suits that are right in front of the egg sac. And then it starts tripping out and whatever. And the leading lady, Vera Farmiga, just, like, runs in there haphazardly without a suit. And she's fine.
Yep.
And I'm like, well, wait.
Turns on her little machine and figures out how to sing to it, a little lullaby.
It's like, it's okay. I'm immune to radiation. I'm a lead character.
No. Again, delete. She just needs to be deleted.
And then also her daughter follows her into the same chamber.
Like, because what kind of security measures do they have?
Zero!
There? It's like anybody with the right level of, like, or the right badge and the right amount of, like, speed could...
No, just steal a badge off a random person. Everyone has access.
Now, I will say, once, like, in that sequence, my first thought was, this lady needs to go away. Vera Farmiga. Like, she's worst mother of all time and everything. But then later on, when you learn the connection that she has to the eco-terrorist group, suddenly I was like, oh, I guess in a way it sort of makes sense to, like, a dumb person why she would have her daughter with her there, because the eco-terrorist presumably wiped out everybody else in the facility. Mm-hmm. So maybe it's like, oh, well, if I have my daughter close to me, because you don't know at first that she's a turncoat.
No.
But then
you don't know at all.
And you don't know, like, the second scene that they're in. Like, it's something that develops over time. It's not surprising by the time it's revealed, because she's an idiot. Mm. But, like, at least as an idiot, it kind of makes sense that she would have her daughter there with her when all the stuff was going to go down.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which, it's true. It's like, that began to scream, like, red lights instantly when they're like, okay, they're taking both of them. And then when they arrive to the next location to do what they're going to do, there's no, like, force. They're not, like, grabbing them. They're not like, come on, you're prisoners. It was more like, all right, you ready to go? Like, come on, let's go.
Well, I mean, they're a bunch of buffoons.
They're idiots.
Not to mention, once again, Vera Farmiga in Antarctica, when the detonator goes onto the, you know, the gangway or the catwalk or whatever you call it when it's that huge. No. Moron. Total click. Idiot.
I thought one of the things that I struggled with was the look that Millie Bobby Brown's character gives to her dad. And I'm like, at first I was like, why is he only trying to save her? But then it made sense. Like, okay, you save the daughter, then you come for the wife later. But it was like, she's like, there was a string of different faces that she was making that just kind of was like, I don't know if is that gas? What is she doing? Wait, what? Why is she stepping back? And then the whole aftermath of like, oh, she's siding with her mother. And then her mother does all that stuff. It was really weird. I think that was part of the reason why I kind of struggled with Millie Bobby Brown's character. Because I'm like, that was a lot of emotions to show in just a really short amount of time just to say no. But, hey, you guys are on the Millie Bobby Brown bus, so.
Well, I just blame the mother the whole time. Because I was like, this has something to do with her. And it's 100% her fault.
Who, Millie Bobby Brown?
No, the mother! No,
the idiot character.
Oh, I'm not even going to get on that really dumb, like, speech or that monologue that she gets on when she calls him.
Oh my
gosh. I wish I was there so I could hang up the phone. Like, just, I was having none of it.
Somebody give me a phone so I can hang up. This is a video call. Give me a phone to hang up on her.
Well, and they're all, like, sitting there listening respectfully while she drones on and on and on.
Yeah.
Like, I'm sorry, what? And then he, like, calmly has a conversation with her. It's like, no, she, like, call a freaking Amber Alert. Like, she abducted your daughter to side with terrorists, to unleash monsters to destroy the world, and you're going to wait until she's done saying her piece, and you're going to calmly, like, respond back as if this is a logical conversation on any level.
She is literally a terrorist now.
And a moron.
You're spending time listening to her. What are you talking about? Hang up the video call. Find your daughter. And why did Kyle Chandler just, like, let literally anything stop him from finding his daughter?
Because he didn't get the newspaper for the next day.
That was legitimately good.
So, moving forward, like, one of the things I just kind of wanted to highlight before we start wrapping this thing up, I'm a huge fan of the director. I don't know if you guys are familiar with Michael Dougherty. He hasn't done a lot, but he's done enough that I've been impressed with in terms of, mostly, like, comedic horror movies. Because he did Trick or Treat from 2007, which I really liked. It was kind of like an anthological-type film. And then he did 2015's Krampus, which was fun, but it was interesting. I see the disgust on Chad's face.
Gosh.
Did you see it?
No. Oh. You can tell by the poster that it's a terrible movie that I'm not going to watch.
Okay.
Well, I'm not going to subject myself to that mess.
Please.
Well, he has a very interesting way of stringing like horror into his movies. Now, comedy and horror into his movies. And it's done really well, normally.
That explains Bradley Whitford's character, exactly. Actually.
A lot of his movies, they have those comedic beats to separate too much of a
singular
thing.
Yeah, but those
thing.
Are B movies.
Yeah, 100%.
Like, this is not positioned as a B movie, nor is it trying to be a B movie. I mean, it's a monster fight movie. I get it. But this is trying to legitimize monster fight movies.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's touches like that. I have the same complaint against like Sam Raimi for the first set of Marvel Spider-Man films.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they weren't Sony's Spider-Man films with Tobey Maguire, but because he did his style was to be campy.
Yeah.
And that came across, and I'm like, no, Spider-Man is a very respectable character. Yeah, he cracks jokes and, you know, whatever, but, like, he's not campy. It's not like 1960s Batman television show, right?
No.
Like, and I really, even as a young person, I did not like that read of the character or the franchise. And similarly here, it's like, what are you doing?
Yeah.
All of this is just extra and unnecessary. It was very aggravating.
So I guess one of the things we could probably say in all earnest, the general consensus here is that...
Delete the people.
Yeah. The creatures were the best part. Yes. Was there any other part that you guys wanted to highlight or you guys actually appreciated about the film?
I want to talk about the oxygen bomb. Because I fundamentally do not understand what they expect to happen.
Okay.
And I don't understand what's supposed to happen.
I can explain.
So, you should have let him finish saying his piece.
Yeah, what you did is what they all should have done when she video called in.
That's what I was going for.
Okay, Eddie, what would you like to tell us about the oxygen bomb?
So the oxygen destroyer is actually a weapon that was utilized in some of the first, like, I think the first sequel of the Godzilla films. The oxygen destroyer was in response to, actually, I think it's in the first Godzilla film, was in response to how to destroy Godzilla as a parallel to the hydrogen bomb. So because if you haven't seen the original 1950s Godzilla movie, was meant to be a story that told of the destruction from atomic bomb testings and nuclear war. And when it made its way to America, they changed, like, America took everything that was there, redubbed it into more palatable, according to them, palatable lines, changed up a lot of stuff, and added an American character. So they really kind of...
Because at the time, it's already even now, like, a very uncomfortable reality that America dropped two atomic bombs on Japan.
Yeah.
Like, that's a very uncomfortable, like, history fact reality in the real world.
Yeah.
So, yeah, you can imagine, like, essentially in the 50s, like, basically the next day, a movie comes along that says, like, hey, that's monstrous.
Yeah.
Literally. And then, like, the American audience is like, oh, look, an entertainment product. Let's, like, you know, water it down a little bit and, like, just, you know, whatever. So I get it, because it's extremely awkward. Like, it's a terrible reality.
Yeah. And so in response to that, the Japanese created the oxygen destroyer as kind of the quote-unquote answer to the to take care of their problems, so to speak,
because it depletes all the oxygen from an area. Is that what it does?
No, it's just literally a play on, like, so you had the hydrogen bomb, so this is the oxygen bomb.
Oh, that's dumb.
There's no science behind it, just they use the hydrogen name. So what's closest that we can use that people may say, oh, there's a parallel to that, the oxygen destroyer. So that's the little Easter egg there, going back to the very first film. So there's really no merit to it. It doesn't make any sense. And I don't really know if it Well, obviously it didn't because they had subsequent films after that, but it didn't really kill Godzilla. So, but yeah, that's the little thing. That
so in this movie, the military is trying to kill both King Ghidorah and Godzilla at the same time with the oxygen bomb. And it's devastating to the ocean's wildlife.
Yep.
And doesn't do a darn thing to King Ghidorah and kind of knocks Godzilla out of the fight for a period of time.
Causing the film to kill Kenta Watanabe.
Yeah, see, that's... I guess I got focused on the words oxygen destroyer being accurate because, you know, the ocean is made out of, like, hydrogen and oxygen. So if you detonate a bomb that's called the, you know, oxygen destroyer, you just have a bunch of hydrogen and that's gas. So I was kind of expecting most of the ocean to just vanish, not just still be there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and I thought, like, when all the dead fish weren't, like, dismembered but just like floating, I was like, oh, it took all the oxygen out of the water and they all died, and that's what they were trying to do to the monsters. Is what if they, assuming they breathe oxygen also, then destroy the oxygen and they can't, you know.
So the official Godzilla fandom explanation is that the device works by activating a chemical stored within its spherical center, which causes the center to split in half and open. Once released, the chemical, later dubbed micro-oxygen, reacts violently with water, isolating oxygen molecules and splitting them. The molecules are then liquefied. This means that any organism exposed to the chemical will first suffocate from the lack of oxygen and then disintegrate.
Okay.
Now, that's not explained in the movie.
So we're not off.
No, no.
Base.
Okay.
I didn't know actually how it worked until I read that.
I mean, it's a make-believe weapon, so...
Yeah, but, like, I feel like that would work closer to what I would expect when you use those words.
Yeah, totally. So,
There you go.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Anything else to highlight in the movie other than the oxygen destroyer?
No, the monsters were awesome.
Yeah.
Like, the monsters delivered. And if I had my druthers, as I'd say from the Midwest, or as my, like, grandparents' generation would say from the Midwest, if I had my druthers, a druther, not have as many people, not focus on the human storyline as much, but it still needs to be there. Like, I do love the perspective that it provides.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, just do the monster battle stuff. You delete like an hour from the movie, and that's not a bad thing.
No, not at all.
See, what they should do is basically, you know, you have human characters. Whenever Godzilla comes in, it's like, oh, guys, let's get out of the way. Godzilla's coming. And then you focus on Godzilla, and then the humans come back after the fight's done. And it's like, okay, here's where we stand.
Yeah,
like that seems like it would probably jive slightly better than just delete the mother, and then you've got a good movie right there.
Yeah.
You guys were mentioning also something about a really great composer.
Bear McCreary.
So, for those who don't know, Chad, who is Bear McCreary?
He's a composer. I first encountered his work on the television show Battlestar Galactica, which he composed all of, including that incredible rendition of All Along the Watchtower, I believe. And
man's a genius.
Gosh, it's so good. And he's done a lot of things since then, but I mean, that's what made me just like know his name and trust his work, and I was really excited. I didn't really notice, you know, like some composers have a certain style, like Hans Zimmer, I can usually recognize. I bet this is, or John Williams, even better example. Yeah. Like, oh, this is a John Williams score. I wasn't listening in the movie and thinking, oh, this is a Bear McCreary score, but when I saw his name in the end credits, I was really excited because I was like, oh, that's why I like the music.
Yeah, like, throughout, I didn't see the name in it, but, like, throughout the movie, I was like, oh, this track's pretty nice. Like, like occasionally, like, the music really kicked up, and I was like, yeah, like I really liked it. And once, like, I found out it was him, I was like, that makes a lot of sense, because, like, he just does an excellent job whenever I hear some of his stuff.
Yeah, totally.
So, wrapping this all together, let's go ahead and go around the table and see, does the film pass or fail, and how many monocles? I want to go ahead and start with Chadley.
Oh, okay. Before I do that,
yes,
I do want to point out one other small touch that I really enjoyed.
Sure.
The end credits.
Yeah.
So in the actual like written credits in the movie, you have typically like character, actor, character, actor, character, actor, right? When you get to the monsters, Godzilla himself, Rodan himself, Mothra herself. Like, I just really enjoyed that. Like, you don't have to do that, but the fact that they did was really cool.
Yeah. And mind you, for those who are unaware, there is a somewhat of a mid-credit and an end-credit scene. So just so you know, if you're that invested in the film, stick around for that.
Yeah.
Spencer, was there anything else you wanted to add?
No.
Okay, so we vote.
So we vote. Chadley, go ahead and start us off.
This is a really interesting one because I'm split. I'm like, the monster movie half of it passes. Yeah. The human movie half of it fails.
Yeah.
So I don't really know overall what to give it.
Yeah.
So I'm just going to kind of give them... So the monsters pass and get a 4 out of 5. The humans fail and get a 1.5. And the 1.5 is all Millie Bobby Brown.
Wow. Yeah. There you go. Spencer.
Yeah. No, see, I'm in the same boat as Chad. Because, like, passing this movie with that mother in it is just unbearable.
Like, with that mother in it.
I really hated her. Like, you have no idea. But failing it is overly harsh.
But then does that serve to the overall purpose of that she's a very despicable person and you're supposed to hate her?
No, because she's illogical.
You don't hate her, like, despicableness. You hate her, like, unnecessariness.
I just don't even understand her entire point.
Like what are you doing here?
She learned nothing over the last 5 years. That's what's so annoying about her. So, like, I'm stuck in this ether of the movie both passing and... It's Schrodinger's movie. Like, I don't know what to do with it.
You don't know if it's dead or alive, so you're just keeping it within you?
Yeah, it's in a box. I don't know what it's doing. It's you pass it if you feel like it's passed, fail it if you feel like it's failed.
How do you feel?
I don't know. I just keep that box closed. And hope something good happens later. But I will be giving this movie a 3. Most of the negatives have to do with the people. But some of those monster fights were really great.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to pass this film as a whole because of the fact that I really liked the kaiju fights. I loved everything about the creatures. The people, not so much. But... I kind of was just really focusing a lot on the creatures because I wanted to see a lot of those battles. And sadly, I'm going to be pretty frank with you guys. I didn't really pay much attention to the people. So I
how can you not? They dominate so many sections of this movie.
You can ignore them sometimes.
Yeah, some of them, it was just like, they're talking.
Oh, no. Kyle Chandler got hit with something. Go back to what Godzilla's doing.
Kyle Chandler.
A child.
Got hit by a lot of things. Common sense was not one of them. I'm going to pass the film just based on the fact that I really love the kaiju fights, and I'm hoping that the next film, they kind of steer away from more people focusing.
Which he's back in the next film, by the way.
Yes. Let's hope she is not.
Let's hope his daughter is. Well, it's
no, I'm not.
Are you serious?
I meant the mom.
Are you serious?
I know who you meant. Is that a serious comment you just made? Did you watch this movie?
I hope the mom is not.
This man did not watch the movie.
Okay.
Did you fall asleep at the end?
Eddie? No. Did Eddie? You see a did body?
There was a nuclear explosion.
Don't be ridiculous. There are no bodies left when that happens.
If this woman comes back as Nuclear Woman.
You don't know. Just saying. In terms of
I have never.
No, I haven't either.
Oh my gosh.
In terms of monocles, I'm going to give this movie 2.5 out of 5. It was good. All those 2.5s, though, come from the monsters.
Well, now so. I question that score because I don't know if you actually watched the movie.
I saw the whole movie. I saw what happened to her at the end. Long live the king. I saw that.
That was a stupid line,
but
too.
Still, just saying.
Just delete this woman from the movie. Let's recut it without her.
Here's a charge to the internet. If you get a copy of the film, just cut all the parts with her in it out and see how the movie ends up. So that about wraps up another awesome episode of the Film Philosophers. Remember, you can check out all our previous episodes on our website at filmlosophers.com, and you can check out all of our social pages at facebook.com/filmlosophers and twitter.com/filmlosophers.
You'll get it one of these days. I believe in you.
Before we go, we want to let you know of a couple upcoming weekend releases. You got The Secret Life of Pets 2.
Really? That's the one you put first? Really?
Because I want to give you room to cheer
I'm
in the
even
second one.
More mad at you. First, for not seeing this movie.
I did see it.
Second, for giving my next movie short shrift.
And Dark Phoenix.
Yes.
So, obviously you can tell which one we I'm
mad at both of you right now.
Losing air.
Oh my gosh.
This is the oxygen destroyer.
Gosh.
So, obviously, you can tell which one of those movies we are going to see for next week.
Pets 2.
Spencer, you astound me.
Also, we want to let you know next week will be Chad's special episode. So, we got a couple things in store for that episode, as well as a conversation with the film about the film Dark Phoenix, not with it because they're not going to show up and whatever. But so stay tuned as we will be giving you more information on the social pages about what to expect.
Okay,
Mr. Chadley,
we're gonna do a whole... gonna like it or am I gonna like be upset?
That depends. Okay. Have you seen the movie Saw?
No. Just why would you think I would have seen that movie?
I want to play a game.
Oh gosh.
I already have the voice.
Oh gosh.
So this was fun. So, like we said, check us out on Facebook. Let us know if you've seen the film already, if you think exactly like we did, if you actually enjoyed it, if you thought the people were the best part and the creatures could have gone. I want to know what you thought. We want to know what you thought. Let us know on our Facebook and Twitter page. So that about wraps this up.
It sure does.
So, from all of us here at the Filmlosophers, I'm Eddie.
I'm Chad.
I'm Spence.
Class dismissed.